Welcome to everyone. Start with some news, wonderful news from the Katir family that their daughter Amala just gave birth to a baby girl in Kuala Lumpur. Congratulations. Start with another story. Relates to Gurudeva and happened after Gurudeva's passing. The Sendin family, Nadan, Miravati, and Chidambaram, were in the Siddhi Vinayaka temple in Sacramento having Namakarana for Chidambaram and Miravati, and some of our members were there. I told this story once, but most of you weren't here, so I'm telling it again. So, one of the members sent me an email afterwards and reported on it and said, Chidambaram was a little bit restless there for a while, but then he looked up and saw Gurudeva and quieted right down. So this member perceived Gurudeva in his spiritual body, of course, and was aware that Chidambaram was looking at Gurudeva, and that sight influenced Chidambaram and made him feel very peaceful. So Chidambaram certainly is a special baby, and that's a special member too, to be able to see Gurudeva like that. Maybe some of you saw Gurudeva this morning. He certainly did feel quite present. I also wanted to honor some special guests. We have some gurus among us this morning. You may think did some of the monks get a new initiation? Where are these gurus? But, in fact, the gurus are all of you who are fathers and mothers. Yes, all of you who are fathers and mothers are indeed gurus. In fact, the first guru. So, in thinking ahead for the year, and we have a new year here, I'm starting to develop a talk on parents as gurus to take around later in the year to when we're visiting Mauritius, Malaysia, and Singapore and elsewhere. So I'm developing it, so I thought I'd share some of the preliminary aspects of it this morning. So it'll include, of course, Gurudeva's recent message about the war in the home. You're all familiar with that, which he took to the United Nations and spoke there before a large gathering of spiritual and religious leaders on the idea that everything starts in the home. So if we want to change the behavior of the world, we have to change the behavior in the home. And that it's the way that children are raised, violently or nonviolently. If they're raised with a lot of corporal punishment, that's considered a war in the home. They're taught that violence is acceptable and that violence is how you solve problems. And so later on, when they grow up in life, of course, they express that violence because their first guru taught them to solve problems by using violence. So that was Gurudeva's message, a very powerful message. And, of course, that's an important part of the talk, but I do plan to add a lot more other subjects. And, in fact, I'm going to look for help over the next few months from all of you to contribute ideas. Many of you have had many, many years of raising children and grandchildren, have lots of experience, plus have been teaching classes in alternatives to corporal punishment, which we call positive discipline. So all of that experience will be very valuable in helping to mold this talk over the next few months so we can take a wonderful message out to the world when we travel later in the year. So, swamis and other religious teachers are in an unusual position of being a second guru. Someone else has been there first. So, an analogy to dancing. So, if you are someone's second dance teacher, what they learn from that first teacher is really important. If they learned in an unsystematic way for many years and didn't really go at it in the correct way, then what do you have to do? You have to spend years undoing what they were taught by the first teacher, right? You can't make any progress at all. You have to undo all the mistakes, all the erroneous moves that were taught by the first teacher. So a Swami is like that too. And Gurudeva faced this time and time again. Someone comes to him as an adult in their 20s or 30s. What does he have to do? He has to spend years helping the individual undo what the first teacher did before any additional progress can be made. So you can see the importance here. There needs to be a good working together to agree on some basic principles. And if basic principles are agreed upon, then when a young adult approaches a Swami, the Swami can help right away. Years and years don't have to be spent undoing what was done by the first guru. So that's the idea behind the talk. You can see how important it is. Another email came in recently from a young woman in her mid-20s, married, living with her husband, who interacts with her mother quite often. And the mother has always and still continues to constantly criticize her. She can never do anything right, and her mother's never happy with what she does. So, she's been reading Merging with Shiva now for a couple of years, and she says, boy, you know, before I read Merging with Shiva, this upset me so much. I was just constantly upset by my mother and constantly feeling negative thoughts about myself. Now that I've read Merging with Shiva, I'm doing better. It just upsets me a little bit. But I still wish she just wouldn't do this. Every time I get with her, she just complains and complains and criticizes me. You know, I want to take care of her in her old age, but, you know, this is really hard. So she went on like that. Unfortunately, she's reading Merging with Shiva, but you can see the problem the first guru created, right? Created a terrible sense of self-esteem. The poor young woman does not have a positive image of herself. And why is that? Because her mother created a negative one. And now she has to work for a number of years to get rid of that negative image. It wasn't there when she was born. It was put there by her mother. So the goal, of course, is for her to read Merging with Shiva and for her to encourage her more until she realizes that, gee, she's perfect. It's her mother who has the problem. Right? She's a perfect being. The mother has the problem of finding faults in others and verbalizing them, and of not building self-esteem. So that the young woman's in perfect shape. It's her mother who needs to learn a different form of behavior. But that may not happen, but at least the young woman will reach the point where she realizes that. You know, she takes on the attitude, gee, I'm just fine. It's my mother who's got the problem. But that takes a little doing. So, how do we build self-esteem? Here are some thoughts. Avoid lowering self-esteem through comments that are critical. As how could you do such a stupid thing? That's a famous one, huh? How could you be so stupid? How could you do such a stupid thing? What a dumb thing to do. I'm sure you won't succeed at this. You're just so dumb. You know, those kinds of comments are actually made by parents. And when the child hears them year after year, it goes in and creates that sense of, gee, I'm dumb because my parents told me so. So then the Swami has to come along and try and get that out. So there are options. When correction is necessary, only correct the behavior, not the person. Here's an example. What you did was really foolish. So that's the behavior, right? It's not that you're foolish. What you did was really foolish. But you are smart. I am sure now that you know better, you won't do that again. So the behavior was foolish, but the child is smart. And certainly is smart enough not to do it again, right? So you correct the behavior. You don't challenge the person. The behavior is stupid or foolish, but the person is never stupid or foolish. Build self-esteem through comments that praise the child when doing well. Making comments such as, "I am sure you will do well." And here's one that Gurudeva followed very systematically. Build self-esteem through creating successes for the child. For example, teaching your son how to grow something simple in the garden, and then when he does it on his own, praising him. So Gurudeva raised all of us on that simple principle of giving us things to do that were within our capabilities, and when we did them successfully, he would praise us. Then, of course, he'd give us something a little bigger to do, and when we did that successfully, he'd praise us. And what was that doing? It was building a subconscious with an attitude of being able to be successful. I am able to be successful. I am able to take on challenges and do them well. And why do we have that attitude? Not because somebody told us about it, but because we actually had many, many successes and were praised for them. Because that happened to us, we have a positive subconscious, one that feels it can do things. I can, I will, I am able. That's its natural attitude because that's the way someone was raised up.